Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle. Regional Roundup with Leslie Lopez, regional correspondent with the Straits Times on Money FM 89.3.
Money FM 89.3, you're in the breakfast huddle this Wednesday morning, and it means it's time to check in on what's happening around the region.
We all know that COVID-19 has impacted business across the world, obviously, but here in Southeast Asia, there is some apprehension over the rate of recovery.
Plus, the election in East Malaysia's state of Sabah takes place over the weekend with an unexpected twist, having an impact on the polls.
And there's still political unrest in Thailand. Protesters there continue to push the boundary in showing their dissatisfaction over the Prime Minister and the monarchy.
So joining us on the line to break it all down is our Straits Times regional correspondent, Leslie Lopez. Leslie, always great to talk to you. How are you doing?
Leslie.
Hi, good morning. Let's first of all talk about the concerns arising about big business in Malaysia. Earlier this year, casino to hospitality conglomerate Genting Group announced thousands of job cuts, right? And the national oil company Petronas posted record losses. It highlights these companies in corporate Malaysia that are heavy on debt, right? And light on cash. What does all of this mean for the Malaysian economy?
Well, you know, the economy is going through one of its toughest, if not its toughest stretch. And it is facing challenges never confronted before. You know, and all of this at a time when politics in Malaysia is very much in a state of paralysis. So, you know, all of this will require some very deft handling for the country to wiggle out of this situation. You know, that the fact that two of the country's most well-known concerns are facing troubles, naturally, there are fears that there's some smoldering bushfires that have yet to be spotted in the rest of corporate Malaysia. But having said that, there is still some breathing space. Loans only get classified as non-performing, and that is when banks must make provisions for these troubled loans only after 3 months. So we have until some time to the end of the year. And if the global environment doesn't pick up by then, we could be in for a bumpy ride.
And staying on the subject of business across Malaysia, it's been announced that Malaysia's construction industry suffered some 18.5 billion ringgit, that's about 6.1 billion Sing dollars, in losses during the first three phases of the country's lockdown. So with the disease seen as being more or less under control in Malaysia, what's expected now for the recovery in the construction industry?
Well, it's still going to be slow. You know, the construction industry has been not just hit by COVID, it's also been hit by the politics because, you know, large infrastructure projects, some related with China, have taken, you know, different forms. You know, some have slowed down, some have stopped completely. And so, and these construction projects contribute to the huge element of the construction sector. Actually, if you look at the numbers, the construction sector is expected to contract by something like 47% in the second quarter of 2020. Those are estimates, but this far outstrips contractions in the manufacturing sector, which is like roughly 15%. And, you know, year on the year in the numbers, mining 17.4%. So we're seeing really some worse than expected performance in the construction sector. And that's going to be bad for the overall economy.
Okay, Leslie, let's take it to the state of Sabah. And what a twist in the tale. The Philippines reviving their claim over the state, all of that coming ahead of this election on Saturday. What's the background to this story? And why is this coming up again?
Well, you know, this is something that comes up fairly regularly by politicians from both countries. And typically at times when, you know, various groups want to stoke nationalistic sentiment ahead of key events. And in this case, the Sabah election. I think historians and academics will argue that both sides have strong grounds for the claims. But this issue has been doused as quickly as it flares up because both countries want to maintain good relations, particularly because they're members of ASEAN. But then again, these are tricky times. You know, claims by China over South China Sea is getting a lot of attention from the U.S., and we could see this bilateral spat morphing into something maybe perhaps more serious, actually, in the months to come.
We're talking with Leslie Lopez, the Straits Times regional correspondent based in KL. Leslie, let's move on to Thailand. A plaque has been placed by protesters to declare that the country belongs to the people and not the king. That has been removed from near the Grand Palace near Bangkok. What's the symbolism behind this plaque? Could the protesters get even more bold with their gestures coming toward this weekend?
Well, Glenn, I think this is huge. You know, when a movement without any known leader gets the following and metal to do something this gusty, it does suggest that we are headed for some rough period ahead. You know, there's clearly a line that's been drawn in the sand where both sides stand. Previously, it was just reform of the constitution, which gave the military too much say. But by taking aim on the royal household, I think the protesters have raised the standoff several notches, and this can only mean trouble in the coming weeks, especially in the streets of Bangkok, where violent protest isn't something out of the ordinary.
Yeah, it's really been quite remarkable how those protests have evolved over the last few months, hasn't it?
Yes.
Let's go finally, Leslie, to Indonesia, where lawmakers have started to deliberate the controversial Family Resilience Bill. Members of the public and activists have heavily criticized this 98-page draft bill. It includes provisions interfering in personal matters. It attempts to bring back the traditional and patriarchal way, I might say, of managing households. Tell us a little bit more about it, if you can, and why the Indonesian government wants to implement this.
Well, whether this gets implemented is unclear, but what is very apparent that the bill does deflect the push, especially among Islamic groups, for greater say over society. And also, I think it's too early to say if the government is supportive of this thing, because chief backers of the bill are Islamic parties, PKS and PAN. And, you know, the very contentious article in this proposed piece of legislation, you know, about how women must take care of household affairs, maintain family unity, fulfill their husband's rights in line with religious norms. So, you know, Indonesia, that we all know, is very progressive, and this is surely to come under more debate and opposition, I think, in the coming weeks. Too many intrusive elements in this bill, and I just can't see it being approved in Indonesia.
Okay. Leslie, it's very, very nice to talk to you always. I hope that you're staying safe, fit and well up there in Malaysia, and we'll check in with you again next week. Thank you so much. Leslie Lopez, our Straits Times regional correspondent.
Thank you, Malaysia. Thank you, Claire.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg. Or download the SPH Radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.